What I'm going to be teaching all week long is basically the idea of how can you guys be the man that your family needs? You can look at this as family leadership. You could look at it just being a man. And I have two ideas that coincide. How can you be the man that your family needs you to be today, right now? When you go back home after this camp, your family is going to need a certain amount of manliness out of you. But really what you're doing is you're training yourself now to become the man that your wife and your children are going to need you to be someday. And so that's what we're going to talk about all week long. And we're going to break down some different aspects. We're going to talk about one of the hardest things for a man to be, but one of the most important things for a man to be is a gentle man. Not gentleman. But if you ever thought about that, gentleman means gentle man. We're going to talk about being a gentle man. We're going to talk about how to make decisions. How to make wise decisions. Today and in the future. We're going to talk about serving your family. You know the key to leadership really is service. You show me a good leader, I don't care if he's a military leader, I don't care if he's a business leader, I don't care if he's a church leader, I will show you a servant. Who was the greatest leader ever? What was he? He was a servant, right? Matter of fact, that's how he's addressed in Isaiah, is the servant, right? So where I want to begin today is to talk about manliness, okay? When I was a young man, my grandpa Harris and my grandma Harris had 13 kids. And I remember my grandma Harris was talking to one of my cousin's wives one time at a family get-together. And so this lady, she for the first time she heard my grandma Harris had 13 children. My grandpa Harris was about this big around, feeble. He died not shortly after that. No teeth. He smoked cigarettes. He had one tooth right there, and I would put a cigarette right there. I just remember this very vividly. So this lady looked at my grandma and said, "Mrs. Harris, how in the world did you have 13 kids?" My grandpa Harris said, "She was married to a man." And I just thought I was going to die. I mean, he was a man. He was a fireman. He was in the World War II. So he was a man. But to hear my feeble grandpa say that, have any of y'all ever wore a pink shirt? Be honest. What do people say to you? What do other guys say to you when you got your pink shirt on? And then what do you have to say to them? You got to be a real man to wear pink, right? That's right. You know, people. I wear a purple shirt sometimes. It's a light purple shirt. Purple. I say, look, I had four kids. I've been in the military. I'm confident I can do more push-ups than you, and I can outrun you. So don't even call me anything. And isn't that how we are? And I'm pretty confident I can do more push-ups than most of you all. But some of you, I'm sure I can't. But I haven't done push-ups in a week, so I can probably do 35 right now. So if you can't do 35, just stay in your seat. But that's, you know, when we think about manliness. When you think about manliness, tell me, give me some words. What are some things you think about? Honestly, if you think about manliness, what do you think? Strong. Just fire them off at me. Oh, man. There's always one. Yeah, there's always one. Good at that. Huh?
Muscle.
Bliss. Bold. Brave. Huh? A steak eater. Is that what you said? I like that. I really like that. That's right. I mean, we grill, you know? We are men. We grill. And when somebody gets up in your face, if you're a man, what do you do? Give it right back. Ain't nobody going to tread on me. You know, don't try to punk me because you'll get punked. Right? That's our attitude about manliness. Somebody turn to Romans chapter 12 and read verses 1 and 2 for me. It's anybody who gets it. Romans chapter 12.
Therefore I urge you, brethren, by the mercy of God, present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service and worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, so that you may prove that the will of God is that which is good and acceptable and perfect.
I want to emphasize the second verse there. Do not be conformed, but be transformed. You've been in enough Bible classes, you know. What's that word transformed mean? Becoming different. What did you say over here?
Change.
You know, and I'm not a Greek scholar. I've got this real cool Bible program. When I want to know what the Greek word is, I double click on it and Strong's comes up, Thayer's comes up, and I say, oh yeah, okay, that's what that means. And then I close the window and I go on. But you double click on that word transform, and it comes up to be the root word for the word metamorphosis. And I used to be a Super Friends fan, and so I always think of the Super Friends. Remember the Wonder Twins? Y'all probably don't know anything about the Wonder Twins. But the idea of metamorphosis is when a caterpillar goes into the cocoon and comes out as a moth or a butterfly. That's what that word means. That's the kind of change that we're talking about. And look at the passage. How do we get that kind of change? How do we make that metamorphosis? By renewing your mind. So, what we have to do is change our image of what a man really is. See, the world is selling you a bunch of lies. Satan is selling you a bunch of lies. He wants you to think that being a man means nobody treads on me. You know, you cut me off when we're driving, and I'm going to get my car in front of you and slow down to 10 miles an hour because I'm going to show you. That's what the world is selling us. Is that God's image of a man? It's not, is it? Well, let me ask you, what's really being a man?
Doing the right things.
Doing the right things. God gets to decide, right? God tells us what kind of man to be. Now, let me tell you something. And this class is going to be a lot about practical stuff. I've been married for 20 years. And so I have been trained. You go into your marriage thinking, I'm going to be the man, all right? You are the woman, and I'm going to be the man. Yeah, that's going to last about 10 minutes, guys. You know, two things. Never mess with the woman who cooks for you. Arsenic has no flavor. Okay? Arsenic has no flavor. Second thing, and I'm just going to be brutally honest with you right here and right now, and that's how I'm going to be all week long. You want to have a good sex life. You better learn to be the man God wants you to be. You go in and you start demanding and puffing up, there's going to be a lot of nights with headaches. A lot of nights with headaches. You may even find yourself out on the couch some nights. Now, I've never been there. But I'm telling you, you want to have the kind of sex life you think married men have, you better learn to be the man God wants you to be. So, what we're going to do this morning is... in the course of this class, I'm going to give you some things that will help you. And, I mean, you know, you can turn red. What's your name? Because I don't remember it.
Kelvin.
Now, see, Kelvin the hot guy, because Kelvin is a temperature scale, you know. Okay. Man, you're making me sweat now. So, what I want us to do this morning is I want us to think about some characteristics that we need to have to be manly.
Compassion.
And to be godly. You're exactly right. But let's not start there. Let's back up and start with some basics. And so what we're going to do is, I have a feeling that I'm not going to say anything anything new to you. I'm not going to say anything earth-shattering to you. I think that what you'll say is like, man, I should have thought of that. You know, that guy's teaching. First thing I want to say, so it's going to be like we need to be a man of this, okay? So if you're taking notes, that's what we're going to be kind of doing. The first thing I want to say is we have to be a man of faith. You've got to start with the basics. You've got to be a man of faith. What's 2 Corinthians 5:7 say? 5:7. 2 Corinthians 5:7. What's that say?
For we walk by faith and not by sight.
For we walk by faith and not by sight. What's that mean to you?
There's other things that God has besides what we can see.
Okay. And so we can see them, right? If we walk by faith, and there are some things of faith, then we can see them, right? So I know you're thinking, no. But the answer is yes. Okay, I know you've never seen heaven with these eyes, but have you ever seen it here? You ever seen it here? When you see a rainbow, what do you think? What's the first thing that pops in your head when you see a rainbow? Noah. You know what the world thinks? That's very interesting because the light is acting at going through there and the moisture is acting as a prism and breaking the lights into the different colors of the rainbow. Yeah, that sounds remarkable, doesn't it? So see, when you walk by faith and not by sight, it's a different kind of a perspective. Okay? I didn't know I was going to mention this early in the class, but it fits. February the 4th, 2008. My 14-year-old daughter had been having some numbness in her left hand. So I took her to the chiropractor thinking she had a pinched nerve. We get to the chiropractor and the chiropractor says, no, this isn't nerves. This is something cranial. So we take her to the family doctor. Family doctor says, you know, I think we need to go get an MRI. We go get an MRI. We're at the MRI imaging center. And the lady opens that little door and she says, your doctor wants you to come back to the office to get the diagnosis. We go back to the doctor's office. He walks in the door. He says, it's bad news. It's a brain tumor. It's a brain tumor. And you just can't imagine what those words are like to hear somebody say, your daughter has a brain tumor. And when we talk about decisions, I want to talk about some of the decisions we had to make with her. We're going to talk about how to be a good decision maker. But I'm going to tell you right now, if it hadn't been for my faith in the Lord and my wife's faith in the Lord, that day would have been a crushing day. And there were worse days after that as well. But when you have a different perspective, you will not hear me say these words, I lost my daughter. You hear people sometimes say, oh, well, we lost a child in such and such year. I didn't lose a child. You know why? I know where she is. Yeah. You don't say something's lost when you know where it's at, right? So, see, my daughter is with the Lord. In whatever capacity that means for her right now, that's where she is. She was a baptized believer. She was a faithful Christian. I know where she is. So, you see how that changes my perspective? I met just the other day a man who his daughter passed away like 17 years ago, and I could hear the sadness in his voice still. And you see that sometimes saying certain things about my daughter Kelsey makes me get choked up, but I'm not moping around like this because I have faith that she is where I want to be someday. I have faith that I'm going to go and be with her someday because I trust in the Lord, because I've committed my soul to Him. So, that's what I'm talking about. It's a different perspective. We see things differently than the rest of the people in the world. And that's the first place you've got to start. You've got to start with this idea. I'm going to look at things different than the world. Another thing I want to say about faith is for faith to be real, it must be seen. I love this little passage. Somebody turn to for me and Mark chapter 2, verse 5. This is the story where Jesus has come back to Capernaum and a large crowd gathers. And some men carry their friend, I believe it is a friend, in on a stretcher. They go up on the roof and they drop him down through the roof. Somebody read the very first part of Mark 2, verse 5 for me.
And Jesus, seeing their faith, said to the paralytic.
Okay, stop right there. Jesus, seeing their faith. How can you see somebody's faith? Through action. That's exactly it. I love what James says. You show me your works without faith, and I'll show you my faith by my works. And so that faith has to be put into action. And to piggyback off what Wes said, I mean, if there's not a real change in your life because of your faith in God, then you don't have faith. If your faith can't be seen by others, you don't have faith. And so you have, not only is it about a perspective and what we see and where we're going, but it has to be seen in what we're doing. I'm going to tell you something. It's easy to get distracted. Man, is it so easy to get distracted. We can get distracted in good things. I know some dads who work too much. They work way too much. And it's not necessarily because they have to. It's because the boat payment needs to get paid. The new RV payment needs to get made. And so they're working like a dog and their kids don't even know them. And if I say something to them, they'll say, well, then we're supposed to provide for our own. A man who doesn't provide for his own is worse than an infidel. Well, that's exactly right. You do. But you don't need everything. Have any of y'all ever, maybe your neighbors or something, got a refrigerator, and maybe when you was a kid, then you grab that refrigerator box and you spend all day playing with that refrigerator box? You ever done that? I mean, I can remember we found a refrigerator box once when I was a kid, and first of all, it started as a fort. And then when it wouldn't stand up on its own anymore, it became a tank, man. We were rolling that thing around in there. You know? And then, you know, as dads, we think we got to buy what's in the box when all the kid wants is a box and some time with you. That's really what they want. And so don't get distracted by the things of this world. You remember when Jesus called Peter out on the water? And Peter was walking on the water, man. I mean, he was walking on the water. What happened to him? Look at those waves over there. Man, I should be walking on water. I should be sinking. And so he starts sinking. Look, lucky for him, he said the right words, Lord, save me. And he was saved. But don't get distracted. Keep your eye on the goal. Make your faith your central. That's who you are. Number two, and we're not going to spend a lot of time on this because I'm going to tell you something you know. We must be men of prayer. Somebody read Romans 12, 12 for me.
Rejoicing in hope, persevering in tribulation, the Lord is prayer.
Devoted to prayer. What some of your other translations say instead of devoted to prayer?
Faithful.
Faithful to prayer.
Steadfastly.
Steadfastly.
Constant in prayer.
Constant in prayer. There's one modern translation that says addicted to prayer. addicted to prayer. I've already heard some jokes about Joe and his Mountain Dew. And you know people who are like that, like addicted to Mountain Dew. You know, I mean, they never go anywhere without it or whatever. You know, all of my family plays video games, and including my wife, she usually plays the smart computer games where, you know, we're playing the sports games and the kill people games. Just aliens. That's all we kill is aliens in our house. But except Germans. We kill Germans. Talk about that. Do you German?
No.
Anyway, there are times where, especially my wife, will get on this one video game, or this one game, and man, she just plays it constantly. I don't know, Simon David, that's my son, sitting there laughing because I do the same thing with football games, you know. And I'll get on there, and I mean, the world just goes away because I'm addicted to that. That's how we need to be with prayer. Addicted to prayer. You know what our biggest problem with prayer is? And I've been thinking about this a lot. Is that here's what we say to ourselves. I don't pray like I should. And I know I don't like I pray. I know I don't pray like I should. So I feel better now. So I'm not going to pray anymore than I normally do. Because I know I have a problem. I don't pray like I should. And so since I know I don't pray like I should, and I'm admitting to myself, then that's... You know what it's time for us to do? It's time for us to quit saying, I don't pray enough, and get down and pray.
Right.
Are we just going to talk about it our whole life? Are we going to make some changes in our life and make ourselves pray? I love this about Daniel. Daniel chapter 6. Daniel has been appointed to an important position in Darius' kingdom. And there's some guys that don't like Daniel. They don't like him. And so they're going to do something about him. They're going to get him out of the way. Somebody read Daniel chapter 6 verse 4 to begin with.
Then the commissioners and satraps began trying to find a ground of accusation against Daniel in regard to government affairs. But they could find no ground of accusation or evidence of corruption, inasmuch as he was faithful and no negligence or corruption was to be found in him.
Just how would you imagine this scene? Got all these guys, they're gathered around, they're in this meeting room, they're thinking, we've got to do something about Daniel. We've got to do something about Daniel. Okay, let's send a woman over there and this woman will sleep with him and we'll cause a scandal. Oh, you can't do that because Daniel can't do that. Alright, well let's bribe him and get him to do something and then we can then call him out on the... He won't take a bribe. We've got to do something. We've got to stop him. And so they're just brainstorming. And then somebody says, I've got it. I've got an idea. Read verse 7.
All the commissioners of the kingdom, the prefects and satraps, the high officials and the governors had consulted together that the king should establish a statute and enforce an injunction that anyone who makes a petition to any god or man besides you, O king, for 30 days should be cast into the lion's den.
I've got it! We'll outlaw prayer! Because Daniel is not going to stop praying. We outlaw prayer, and then when Daniel prays, we'll throw him in the lion's den. That's great. Let's do it. And so they passed the law. So guess what Daniel did?
Pray. Goes home and prays.
And he had a habit. What was the habit? Do you remember the habit? He opened his doors and his windows. And so he went home and he did just like the other boys did. If somebody was going to try to get us in trouble and pass a law against prayer, would they really be able to catch us doing something illegal? I mean, that's amazing to think about. Jesus got up early in the morning before it was daylight in Mark chapter 1, verse 35, to go pray. In Mark chapter 6, verse 46, he stayed up late in order to pray. Don't tell me you don't have time to pray. Make time to pray. got to get up early. You got to stay up late. Make time to pray. Third thing is, we must be men of wisdom. And this is one of those things where you're gaining this week. In 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 9, God appears to the young king Solomon. And he basically says to Solomon, "Give me whatever, tell me what you want, and I'll give it to you." Do you remember what Solomon asked for? Wisdom. And we'll talk about that more later on in the week when we talk about making decisions and talk about why he really wanted wisdom. What was he looking for? He didn't want wisdom just for the sake of having wisdom. He wanted wisdom for a reason. And the reason, I'll give you a preview, the reason he wanted wisdom is so that he could be the leader that God wanted him to be. He wanted to be the leader that he knew he needed to be. And so he asked for wisdom. When you think about what you want to be when you grow up, you have all these visions in your head. When you think about the things you would like to accomplish, when you think about the things you would like to own, that you would like to be true about yourself, you have all these things in your mind about what you want. You know, I mean, you know, you're thinking about the car. I don't know what kind of car you might like. I mean, there's just so many cool cars. It's hard to choose. You think about the big house you want, the corner office and the office building and all that stuff. You got all that in your vacation home in Aruba, you know, all that in your head. Turn to Proverbs chapter 4 and somebody read verses 5 through 9, because here's what you really need to be thinking about. Proverbs 4 verses 5 through 9. Go ahead. It's Matthew, right?
Yes. Get wisdom, get understanding. Do not forget nor turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her, and she will preserve you. Love her, and she will keep you. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. In all you're getting, get understanding. Exalt her, and she will promote you. She will bring you honor when you embrace her. She will place on your head an ornament of grace, a crown of glory she will deliver to you.
Get wisdom. In all of your getting, get wisdom. It is the principal thing. That came from a guy who was so rich, he didn't even drink out of silver cups. He drank out of gold and nothing else. And the man says, get wisdom. That's the principal thing. Where do you get wisdom? God's Word. He is the author of wisdom. He is every... You want to talk about wisdom? You can't be wise without God. I know some guys who had no education at all, but they are some of the wisest men that I've ever met in my life, because they know the book. And more importantly, they know the author. I've met some guys who were educated, had so many letters after the name, it looked like another name. And they were fools. Because they start with the premise, there is no God. You start with that premise and there's no road to wisdom. You need wisdom to lead. So here's what I want you to think about. When somebody says to you, or when you think, what do I want to be when I grow up? The answer needs to be wise. Somebody says, what do you want to be when you grow up? Say, wise. And mean it. Because that's where you want to go. I don't care what else you do. If you have wisdom, you're going to be the man God wants you to be. Here's one that I like. Men who know what love really is. Turn to John chapter 13 and somebody read verses 34 and 35. John 13, 34 and 35. Anyone?
new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you, then you must love me. You must love one another. By this all men will know that you are my disciples if you love one another.
Jesus says, by this they will know that you are my disciples. I thought that was because we had a sign out front. Church of Christ, or Christians meet here. That's how people would know we're his disciples. It's all about love. It's all about love. We have to be men who are willing to show others we love them. I don't know what kind of father you have, and this is not an indictment on your dad. I'm telling you what kind of dad you need to be. You need to be the kind of dad who your children and your wife know you love them. They need to hear it from you. They need to see it from you. And they need to know that you love their mom. They need to see it from you and hear it from you. And again, just to give you a little example, there are times where I'll find my wife busy in the kitchen, and I'll go in the kitchen and I'll grab her and I'll pull her to me and I'll hold her and I'll just hold her there and might even kiss her a little bit. And then one of the kids would come up and say, "Mom, what's math problem number 4? You know, we homeschool. What? I don't understand number 4. I'm like, "Go away. I am visiting with my wife." And because first of all, my wife needs that. And we'll talk more about why you need to do that too. And if you remember what I said a few moments ago, you know where I'm going. But I want my wife to know that I love her. I want my kids to know that I love her. I remember this vividly. When I first started preaching, I went to go pray with a man and sit with his family while he had surgery. And he had grown sons. With his sons had children. And each one of them came in to him to tell him goodbye. And when he was going to go back into surgery, these grown men sons kissed their father right on the lips. It made me weep. Because you could see it. They were worried about their dad, and they loved him. And it was so obvious. Real men express their love for the Lord in their words and their actions. Real men express their love for their brethren in words and in actions. Real men express their love for their wives in words and in action. Real men express their love for their children in words and in actions. And I didn't repeat that just to fill time, because I'm getting nervous about the time. But you see what I'm saying? You must love. Don't be afraid to put your heart out there. Now, you put your heart out there, and guess what's going to happen sometimes? It's going to get broken. You know what my answer to that is? So what? Because what you get, somebody might break your heart, but you're going to find people who will love you back that much more. And there's no feeling like that in the world. And it's worth taking a chance at getting your heart broke. To feel that way and to have that. We need to be men of humility. Humble men. And this really kind of goes back to that different perspective on things and being a man of faith. We can be humble. You know what? I don't have to be first in the line at Walmart because I'm going to heaven. Somebody can overcook my steak and I'm not going to be angry and be an idiot over that because I'm going to heaven. There's a friend of mine named Scott Mitchell, and he always likes to say this phrase. He says, "That doesn't affect my salvation." Mm-hmm. We like to play cards together, and there have been times, I mean, we've just been beat like a drum playing cards, And I do. I get a little frustrated here looking. It doesn't affect my salvation. And it gets me right back where I need to be. But we need to be men of humility. And you know, one of the things about being humble, and here's some practical advice about being humble. Don't be afraid to let other people go first. You don't have to make a big noise when somebody doesn't treat you right. You don't have to make a big noise when nobody's paying any attention to you. And that's part of being a man, part of being a true man. Have you ever noticed this? You got a big dog behind the fence, and you got a little dog behind the fence. Which one makes the most noise?
The little dog.
The big dog knows. I'm a big dog. You do not mess with me because I'm a big dog. The little dog has to say, I'm here. Right? Here, did you meet? You get that dog, that little dog, you get on the same side of the fence as that little dog, and guess what he does? That's part of being humility, part of being humble. See, the bully is the most scared person at school. He doesn't act that way. But the reason he acts that way is because he's scared to death. He's scared to death, first of all, somebody's going to find out he's got problems. He's scared to death, somebody's going to find out he's not as tough as he wants everybody to think he is. He's scared. It's the guy who is quiet, that never says anything, he's the guy you got to worry about. I'm going to tell you how I know that. For middle school, I was the bully. And I picked on this guy one time. His name was Jeff. And Jeff never said anything. And so I thought he was a weakling. Until he was standing right there and put his foot right there beside my head. And then I knew Jeff was the big dog. We don't have to advertise our manliness. We are men of God. And that's all we need to know. And not only that, is when you're a man of God, you know what you know? I deplore myself. I've seen you. You are in the heaven. I am a man of ashes. I deplore myself. That's what Job said about himself. After God said, there's no man like him on the earth. Job knew. I mean, what can I brag about? I mean, I should be a dead man several times over. When I stand before the Lord, I'm not going to say, yeah, you owe me this. I can't imagine. There are sometimes I ask God, why would you want me as a son? And so we, again, goes back to that faith thing about perspective. You've got to be a man of humility. Closely related to that is being a man of courage. Now, you think about being humble and courageous. Again, the way the world defines courage, that's almost an oxymoron, right? Because if you're courageous, you're supposed to be out there with your chest out. But no, that's not right. Again, go back to the bully illustration. He's scared. Because he doesn't have anything inside. But when you've got something inside you, you can have courage. When I think of men of courage, one of the very first man that pops in my mind is Joshua. I love the book of Joshua. It's just an awesome book. Joshua is one of those guys in the Bible that it's hard to find anything bad ever said about him. First time we're introduced to Joshua, he's guarding the path for Moses. When Moses is up on Mount Sinai, that's the first time we're really introduced to him. I mean, already, man, this is a guy that you're not going to mess with. This is the guy who, when Moses is having his arms held up because the battle is raging out on the... Joshua is the guy out there fighting the battle. Joshua is one of the two guys who go in to spy the land of Israel, and the land of Canaan, and he comes back, he says, we can take this. Joshua is the guy who goes to that fortified city that Wes was talking about last night and says, we can conquer this. Over and again, God tells Joshua in Joshua chapter 1, be strong and of good courage. But here's the kicker. Because I will be with you. We cannot have courage in ourselves. We can't. Because we are weak. It's courage in God. Again, the way that I didn't fall into a puddle of ooze when that doctor said it's bad news, it's a brain tumor, is because I had confidence in my God. I don't know what tomorrow's going to bring, but I have confidence in my God. I don't know what heaven's going to be like totally, but I have confidence in my God. I don't know why I deserve to go to heaven, but I have confidence in my God. And I thought about this passage, talking about this. I used to be able to wrap my mind around this in 1 Corinthians 12:10, or 2 Corinthians 12:10, when Paul says, for when I am weak, then I am strong. I had a hard time understanding that. Again, it's one of those oxymoron kind of things. But now I get it. When he's weak, he can be strong because he's putting his confidence in the right place. Because earlier in the book of 2 Corinthians, he said, I learned not to trust in myself, but in a God who has delivered, does deliver, and will deliver. That's where he starts in the book. And so when he is weak, then he can be strong. And so the idea is that I can't trust in me, so I'm going to trust in Him. And when I trust in Him, then I can have courage. Then I can be strong. You want to know why we can trust in God? He can be trusted. Somebody turn to Romans 8 and read verses 31 to 39. I've got to a quarter after, right?
I don't know much.
I think
11:10 says mine. Huh? Class 3 starts at 11:10.
Oh, does it? Yeah. Well, I'm done. I'm done. Okay, so let me just say this about it. That passage says God can be trusted. If God was willing to give His Son to you, what is He going to withhold from you? Nothing. Anybody think, can you ever think of a time where God said something was going to happen and it didn't happen? Whether good or bad. Right? Real quick, the last thing I want to say, and this is just a one little sentence kind of thing, being men of action. And I already have this in my notes, but I love the fact that Wes brought that up last night. And he said, fear of God must move us to action. And so we've got to act on our faith. We've got to act on our prayer life. We've got to act on our convictions. We've got to act. We've got to be men that do stuff. Don't be the fat dad sitting in the chair letting your family go to hell. Get up and be the man of faith, prayer, and action. That's what a real man is. I appreciate y'all's attention. Tomorrow, I hope I'm going to get you to speak more than I speak. Thank y'all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Romans 8, 31 to 39. Romans 8, 31 to 39. I appreciate your
response.
I appreciate your comments. Thank you. Thank you, man. Appreciate your encouragement.
I don't know how those things work. Micah
did it, so we can let Micah figure it out. Now, who's in here? Who's?
Bob Walker.
Okay, I'm just going to stay.
Yeah.
31 to 39. Let me vacate the premises. I'm not going to vacate the premises. I'll make sure what you got to say. You staying too?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.